Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, welcome to the Talking City podcast, coming to you from the Manchester Evening News. My name's Joe Bray, joined by Simon Bykovsky. A thrilling international break we have in the middle. We're in the middle of this international break. A few City players in action, a few City players injured or potentially injured that we'll talk about. We're also going to be talking some ticket prices. Got a question and answer session, and we're going to be trying something a little bit different with a, I don't know, do we call it a game in the middle? Or are we going to be choosing a...
It's a talking point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll leave that teaser right there. First of all, Si, enjoying the international break as ever.
Yeah, yeah. Not watched a minute of football since the Newcastle game. So
that completely eradicates my first question of who has impressed you and who has not. In
yeah,
the international break.
I mean, I saw a good clip of Nunes' score of Portugal.
Yeah,
that sort of seemed to be kind of building on. You know, he's made a lot of runs and he's made some nice progressive runs with the ball. At City, but he's not really had that end product, mm-hmm. and certainly in the final third, he's just looked a bit wishy-washy, to use a technical term. I think there was one cross for Alvarez he did maybe against Burnley when he played very well.
Yeah.
But other than that, he's not been there. So nice to see him kind of maybe in, I don't know, not an environment he knows he's more comfortable in, but. You know, another environment where he feels at home, scoring a goal.
And it sounds like Portugal have taken the decision to rest Bernardo Dias for the next game, so he should get another chance.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was something about him maybe missing training, but Roberto Martinez has let Bernardo Silva and Ruben Dias go, so he will definitely be on Pep's Christmas card
list. Yes, Guardiola will be happy because we heard from Haaland and he said... He would come after you if they got injured. And we thought Haaland might have been injured because we saw a clip of him. He came out and said, no, absolutely not. He's fine. I think he played the game for Norway, didn't he? And
yeah, played 75 minutes.
If you've seen the clip for Nunes scoring, have you seen the Oscar Bob?
Yes, yes.
Another player who sort of could do with those 90 minutes, couldn't he? And
yeah, just really. I did the season ratings over the weekend sort of so far and just, I think, apart for Oscar Bob, like every time you see him, he's impressed.
Yeah.
And that was a lovely, lovely goal. So, yeah, he has done himself no favours at all. And Nunes has, you know, done well as well, which is what Guardiola will want in terms of sort of those players around the fringe who City will need for a really demanding schedule coming up and doing well.
One thing that Guardiola won't have wanted to see is Kyle Walker hobbling off, potentially touching his hamstring. He's now out of the Belgium game for England. He said it's frustrating. He hopes it's not that bad. But I think Southgate came out and said, well, Walker doesn't get injured a lot. So it is a little bit of a worry, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Walker has played a lot of games this season. I think only Foden has played more than him for City. So he's been really, really involved. And he did so well against Vinicius, actually kind of injured himself getting back to stop a Vinicius attack that he's going to be, you know, he would have played, I think, both legs. You know, it makes you think back to like the 2022 semi-final when like Guardiola brought Walker back from injury and then Walker got injured again and he brought Stones back from injury and Stones got injured again and sort of, you know, as much as... there was some alchemy at the Bernabeu that saw Real through, like, you know, had City had Stones and or Walker fit, maybe that would have sort of seen them over the line. So, you know, when you're talking about matches against Real Madrid, it is these fine margins and, like, are these players, can you get your best 11 on the pitch? And, like, you know, City, when they won the treble, were able to sort of mostly get through. You know, they had Ake missing for kind of the final few months, but he kind of came round, and then De Bruyne in the final. But, like, injuries and fitness is such a huge part of it. And yeah, ahead of a game against Vinicius, like, Walker is not the player you want to see hobbling off.
I was looking at sort of what they did last season, because Walker found himself out of the team, didn't he? So much so that he looked at a move away in the summer. And in the Champions League, in the both legs of the quarterfinal, in the final, I think the second leg of the last 16, Walker didn't play. Walker was out of that sort of best 11, wasn't he? In Europe, because you had Akanji and Stones sort of alternating in that right back role, pushing into midfield. It worked. So when asked obviously the Etihad if Walker isn't there, you can see what plan they will have, what the plan B is. But in that same run, Walker plays both legs against Real Madrid, and City get through because he mostly wins that battle against Vinicius. So you can see them getting through the Arsenal game.
Yeah.
With, but it's the Real Madrid one. If Walker's out for a longer period.
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, Akanji is very good. And also kind of City, in the earlier sort of infancy of the Stones role, Stones was playing right back and coming in last season. And that kind of, by the time it got sort of by and away, it kind of morphed into Stones playing centre-back. I mean, Akanji did really well at left-back against Real Madrid with Ake injured. So, you know, he can...
And against Arsenal.
Do it against, against sort of a good fullback, but it just requires... just feels like Vinicius is so good and knows that kind of Walker has got his number. He will kind of very much look forward to not having to face Walker.
Well, I think Vinicius said, he was like, oh, it's always a shame when players get injured, but also Walker is the best player I've ever played against.
So. Yeah. So, yeah, I think City will be... how far away are we? About 2 weeks. So,
it feels like the Madrid game is more important for Walker to be back for than Arsenal.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Because I think Real are a better team than Arsenal, and City have kind of got Arsenal's number at the Etihad as well. So it would be a surprise if kind of Arsenal beat City at the Etihad, because I don't think they have, I think they've lost every game that Guardiola's played against them. In Manchester, so, and you know, some big heavy defeats in that. So yeah, I would more cope City to be able to cope without Walker against Arsenal than I would against Real. So it's not kind of like panic stations yet over the extent of Walker's injury, but I think City would dearly love him to be back in time for that Real Madrid game.
And it's one of them, like you said, you don't want to rush such a key player back, and I think City have moved away from that with De Bruyne, Grealish, Stones, that sort of thing.
They have, yeah. Although I remember when Guardiola did bring Walker and Stones back in that year, and he said, you know, sometimes certain games you've got to take the risk. And, you know, Real away would probably count as that risk. I mean, one option that we haven't really spoken about, or nobody's spoken about, is Rico Lewis. He's not really played the second half of the season. And he's tended to play in midfield rather than right back, but he is a good option at right back. He's been called up to the England squad in place of Walker, which kind of makes you think, he's, you know, in terms of players that Guardiola knows he could put in and would do a job, certainly against Arsenal, you know, he played at the Emirates in midfield, but I think...
And he played at right back in the Cup win last season.
Yeah. So... So I think Lewis could be an option, certainly against Arsenal, but he's kind of shown that he's not really fazed by the biggest occasions. With Akanji and then Lewis, you do have options, but Walker's still the one that you want to be lining up against Vinicius.
Yeah. Arsenal have lost the last 8 at the Etihad, last one in 2015. So
yeah, and I bet the aggregate score is pretty bruising as well.
4-1, 1-0, 5-0, 1-0, 3-0, 3-1, 3-1, 2-1. Yeah.
Yeah.
not very good for Arsenal. So another round of games what we're expecting. I think this is where we're going to see the players doing what Guardiola said and be sensible with your minutes. And international managers are probably going to say, right, we'll play you for the first game, but not the second one.
Yeah, but even, you know, it depends on the players. You know, Haaland lost his fitness last year when he stopped playing while the World Cup was on. So, you know, he played 75 minutes in the Norway game against Czech Republic at the weekend. And, you know, if he does play another 60, 75 minutes, that's maybe no bad thing as long as he comes through unscathed. And, yeah, I think it's just about being sensible. And the national team managers will not want their players arriving absolutely knackered for the international tournament. So in the same way that they have to hope for the goodwill, you know, it's a relationship where it should be mutually beneficial because you do need to work with each other. So I think City would be very unlucky to suffer any issues in the next round of games.
There you are, I heard it here first. No further injuries in the international break. The international break is a good time to sort of bury bad news. And we've seen a bit of a controversy with sort of new season ticket prices, which were quietly released on email to season ticket holders and then buried in the website. The headline news is an average 5% rise across the board, which follows a similar rise every year for the last few years.
Yeah.
A lot of fans are unhappy about this. What's the reasoning for it from the club? And you've been speaking to the fans. What are they saying about why they're not happy?
Yes. The club have offered very little in kind of mitigation, really. And, you know, we're not out to sort of slag off the club every day of the week, but equally sort of matters where they're not reading the room and not sort of in line with the fan base, you've got to point it out. And the reason for the average 5% rise, and it is an average, some people have seen it go up sort of 10%, is one kind of in line with the rising operating costs and inflation. And also because other clubs have done it. Other clubs have done it, so we've done it. You know, I don't think it's any secret that sort of, you know, Ferran Soriano and the people in charge of generating money at City sort of think that you should pay incrementally more. It's not a surprise that City have raised season tickets again, because they have been doing sort of 8 or 9 times out of the last decade. So it shouldn't be that much of a surprise.
But the COVID year was the only year that they
Yeah, but nobody really notices in year one, and people say, oh, it's only 30 quid, it's only 50 quid, it's only 70 quid. And then year two, and by the time you look at it, sort of in a decade, it's doubled or it's gone more. It's more than doubled, and the club do need to generate money, but I think kind of the headline news from it is that all four City supporter groups, who are in no way kind of united or on the same page about everything or official,
more about different motivations, haven't they?
Yeah, so we've got the official supporters club, who sort of mostly revolve around tickets. We've got City Matters, who are the official kind of group who liaise with the club on all things, all fan issues. Mm-hmm. We have the 1894 group, who are the supporters who sort of like to take care of atmosphere and banners and those kind of things. And then we have the MCFC Fans Food Bank support group, who are a group of fans who raise money for local food banks and sort of have their local community at heart. They have all slammed the decision and said, called on the club to rethink their strategy. City Matters came out and said, we opposed it at the time when it was put to us. We've not been listened to. All four groups are saying, you need to listen to us, please, and rethink it, because you don't need it. You know, City's revenues are publicly available, and they trail pretty significantly in matchday revenue to Tottenham, Arsenal, United, and all these teams who they're saying are raising season ticket prices because of the nature of the stadium. You know, Old Trafford's got loads more seats, Tottenham's got loads more seats, and is a much more modern Stadium. City have a lot of season ticket holders. They've got 36,000 as opposed to Liverpool, who've got 25,000. So Liverpool can charge sort of individual tickets and make more money than the City fans can from the season ticket holders. And the worry from the fans is that season tickets are going to be priced out and individual match day tickets are going to come in. And that's not to say we don't want any new fans, but it is a problem when you've got sort of the club and the manager demanding atmosphere and wanting the atmosphere maintained, which is what you wrote last week. Like, you cannot, well, it is a blatant contradiction to have the manager saying we need this atmosphere and the club saying we're going to make it much more difficult to retain this atmosphere by pricing fans out of
who make the atmosphere.
And also, I think there's the sense that sort of the North Stand is coming and there's a lot of arguments going on behind the scenes about the North Stand and how sort of, you know, I think the chairman had said he wanted a blue wall. You know, will they get that or will there be a lot of hospitality? We've not been able to get a number on how many season tickets there will be in the North Stand, how many hospitality tickets there will be in the North Stand. So there's no doubt that the North Stand will bring a big chunk of match day revenue that City are missing. So why not let, why not sort of, you know, the increase you're going to get from this 5% rise is minuscule.
Yeah.
Generally, but also in comparison to the North Stand, which is coming in for 25, 26. So, I mean, I never get why clubs sort of raise prices the way big clubs like City, like the, if they had frozen tickets, the goodwill they would have got from fans would have encouraged more fans to spend more on a match day, to have that extra drink at the stadium or to buy a shirt or to buy a program.
Well, this is it when you get the fans who are paying one off, the sort of tourist fans, and I don't want to annoy Postecoglou because he's going to be a very good answer on that, and they are valuable fans in themselves, but when you get fans who are coming for a one-off, they're going to go to a club shop and buy a shirt, buy a scarf, like you say, program, all these stuff that gets extra money. So it's not just that you can charge more for the ticket.
Yeah.
And you can charge more.
And the club know this, right? Because they lowered the what's the criteria for the Real Madrid Champions League game at home last season. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't have to have as many loyalty points as you would normally have for to buy a ticket. And that Real Madrid game became the record sort of retail revenue taken on a match day. Mm-hmm. So they know it. And they've been to the Far East in summer and they've had enormous sort of sales from midweek from on those match days. Those match days were all record sort of numbers again. And so they know that they have this global audience, right, who want to come and want to spend that money. And you know, they should embrace it. You can't say, no, we're going to keep this to only people who've been at Main Road can be at the Etihad. But there's a way to do it. And at the minute, the way City are doing it is out of step with how all four supporter groups who have never previously come together on an issue have said, no, this isn't right. And yeah, we wait and see if there are any changes, but I don't think anyone's got any hopes that there will be any.
It's tricky because that Real Madrid game, you've just used that as an example of the revenue that they can get. And for making one point, you've got Real Madrid and Marca and loads of players saying that was the best atmosphere they've ever played in. And
yeah, and you have loads of fans saying that. I disagree. I thought it was loud.
Yeah.
But I thought it was loud in more of a way of sort of a pre-season game.
Right.
You know, when like people are cheering action.
Yeah.
And City did really well in that first half and blew Real away. Yeah. So the atmosphere was amazing.
You would hope there was a good atmosphere.
But I think the atmosphere for the Arsenal game and the Bayern game before that were more kind of like visceral, intimidating against the opposition. It was proper more of a City stronghold.
And you do notice, don't you, in Champions League games or cup games where there aren't as many season ticket holders, that there are more people down at the front taking selfies and clearly just being in the club shop.
Yeah, and certainly the Real Madrid game, it was just awash with people who had you know, bought the club shop on the way into the stadium.
And signed saying, can I have your shirt? And
And, you know, it feels, you know, I spoke to the 1894 group and they said it's the battle for the heart and soul of the club. Mm-hmm. And that feels dramatic, but it also feels like we're at that point. And it's not just City, it's like every major club is having the same discussions this season. I've seen sort of discussions around atmosphere at the Emirates and Anfield and all these places. But it does feel like the, you know, City need to find the balance. And they know they need to find the balance. But at the minute, where they think the balance is not where all the fan groups think the balance is. And, I wrote at the weekend, like, City's logic for justifying this, the club, is the same as the logic for going into the Super League. It was like, all these other clubs are doing it, we can't get left behind. Mm-hmm. And you sort of say, well, why not just stick to the values that your fans want you to have? And, you know, imagine if, you know, for all the sticks that you get and City fans get online, if they could say, like, for the whole of next season, our club's frozen ticket prices, you know.
And it'd be say what you like 1 year and then raise it the next. It's like, okay, well.
Yeah. But, you know, you can say what you like about the club spending loads of money or anything like that. But is your club frozen ticket prices? No, they're making more out of you. Like, ours have actually said yes. And, you know, it just gives a sense that fans are listened to. Because, you know, there's been plenty of people, we have to say, who have said, what's the big deal?
Well, I was just going to say this.
Get on with it.
On the comments on our articles on Twitter, there is a significant proportion of responses that say, every business is raising the prices.
Yeah.
City aren't immune.
Yeah.
City have just won 5 trophies. It's the price you pay for success, that sort of thing.
And yeah.
I think you can't ignore that is a view of the fan base.
No, that's perfectly legitimate. And, you know, the people, certainly in the US, who don't get, who sort of like, why are people complaining about these prices? Like, it's far more elsewhere. And it is true, but also, you know, just because some people don't mind paying an extra £20 a year or £100 a year doesn't mean that everyone should. And just because that doesn't bother you in a cost of living crisis, it might bother, you know, the person that sits next to you. Mm-hmm. And then your experience is worse than it would be because of that. But that is how kind of, I don't think, sort of, if me and you thought it was an issue, but no fans did, then it wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
But you've got to take the temperature of the fans, and football clubs play on the loyalty of their fans.
Yeah.
And they really kind of, they need the fans.
You pick up the programme every week and
get
a line from Guardiola saying, we need you more than ever.
Yeah, you are how important to us. Yeah, and that was one of the other fan groups who said, you know, when we came back from COVID, it was, you're so important to us. Football without fans is not the same. And then you're trying to price those fans out or get them to pay more to watch the same product. And it's just, yes, football is a business, but football makes a big deal about being a special business and sort of the special relationship it has with supporters. And I think if football clubs show an ignorance of their supporters, they just ignore everything they're asking for, then it doesn't look great. And this comes, it's not come out of the blue. It comes on the back of concerns about the North Stand. Yeah. There's a lot of people, City Matters included, who've been driving sort of the club to publicly acknowledge the problems that supporters face in Istanbul, because, you know, there are a lot of issues and the club have done work behind the scenes, but they've never actually come out and said our fans should have been treated better.
Yeah.
You know, fans want the club to stand up for themselves to stand up for them, just as they stand up for the team and the club and support the team and the club. And, you know, it's got to be a two-way street, and this, with season tickets, has kind of shown that City aren't in listening mode at the minute.
It feels like the fans are starting to sort of stand up and say, no, we're getting taken for a bit of a ride. We've got this. We had the Community Shield, the sort of the Wembley tickets, which isn't necessarily a City issue, but it's a, a fan issue and the schedule that the Premier League have just released of we don't know whether City go to Brighton on the Tuesday or Wednesday a week before. Like,
yeah,
I think fans are starting to say to stand up and say we need better treatment. So it's interesting, and I feel like on its own this rise is just okay. Everything's rising, prices are rising everywhere, but it's the wider context, isn't it?
Yeah, the Community Shield was fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, tens of thousands of season ticket holders boycotting the game because of the kickoff time. And City still sold 30,000 tickets. Like, from a club that in previous years couldn't sell out when they wanted to, sold out when a lot of the fans didn't want them to. A lot of fans wanted there to be a sizable gap in that support so that they could say, look at what the schedule is doing. No, City sort of made it so that, you know, a lot of new people could, not new supporters, but people who weren't used to going to games could go, and they enjoyed their first game, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the atmosphere was dead. No chance. We were sat on the City side of the stadium. Didn't hear a thing.
No.
Players were confused.
Compared to the FA Cup final.
Compared to the FA Cup
final. Different game, obviously.
Yeah. You know, same venue, just months earlier.
Yeah.
And that is what you risk. And, you know, and then if Pep is unhappy with the atmosphere on that day and comes out and says, well, you know, why is this the case? Then you say, well, your bosses have made it unaffordable.
Yeah.
For the people who would make the noise. So
it's always interesting that I think Pep's had to work very hard to get that relationship with the fans when he talks about atmosphere, and he's put his foot in it a couple of times, and I think there's sort of an uneasy compromise has been reached, but it'll be interesting if he is asked about this.
I think so, and you know, you should never forget that, like, Pep is kind of has tunnel vision with these things. Mm-hmm. Like, it's easy to tell Pep wants more from the Etihad, oh, it must be quiet. It's like, no, he wants more from Erling Haaland, and he's just scored a hat-trick.
Yeah.
Like, he constantly wants more and more and more. And he's not prepared to listen to sort of the compromises or the reasons around it, because why should he? It's not his job.
I was just going to say, it's not really his job to think about how much a pint of beer costs him.
No, but equally, he is spokesperson for the club, because it's not like Ferran Soriano is going to come and do a press conference, or Khaldun Mubarak is going to do a press conference and explain.
If they wanted to, that would be
perfect, yeah. But you know, when Pep deflects and says, oh, ask them, it's like, well, you can't, because they don't want to speak about it. Why don't they want to speak about it? Who knows? But, you know, all we're left with is they don't. So we have to ask Pep. And, you know, he is in this position where he's asking for more, but his employers are taking away more at the same time. So it's a really difficult position. And as much as it was kind of put out in an international break, it's been done before the biggest home game of the season.
Yeah.
Like, what a way to unite the fans.
You're
before
calling for unity.
Yeah.
Creating a bit of a division there.
You know, it'd be really interesting to see. You know, I think if maybe there was more time, there might have been a few signs in the crowd that sort of showed how unhappy the fans are about the situation. But, you know, it's a really interesting issue, and it's complicated. Yeah, and
so many contradictions.
Yeah, and it's not just City, it's everyone. Yeah. But, you know, you can't ignore how angry a lot of City fans are about this.
I think, if you do feel strongly about this, let us know. If you want us to keep on banging the drum, we know that fans feel strongly about it. So.
Yeah. Or if you think we're talking nonsense.
Absolutely. As we say, a lot of the comments are, what's the problem? So.
Yeah. But, you know, it will price out some supporters and, you know, will... I couldn't get any answers last week on whether season ticket numbers will be kept. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it may well be that if season ticket holders are priced out, then that a ticket is then sold 19 times, which again isn't necessarily an issue, but it sort of takes away someone who has been there for a long time, or maybe not, but you know, it risks taking away the atmosphere.
Let's leave that there. I'm sure we will come back to this issue because people are still talking about it. We'll be back after a break for something a little bit different.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, welcome back to the Talking City podcast. Before we move on, make sure you watch and listen to the podcast that we did last week. Simon spoke to Steve Aziz, the former City kit man, had a lot of good stories from the, was it the Mancini era?
Winning the FA Cup and the Premier League, so quite an exciting time. The 6-1 at Old Trafford, and yeah, a lot of pre-season in LA, a lot of stories.
Here, I look into the dressing room and I think there's a Balotelli story or two, wasn't there? So we can always rely on that. We're going to, because there is a lack of news in the international break, we're going to try something a bit different. We've been tasked with creating an 11. I'm reading here it's a post-takeover 11, but we can only have one player per nationality. So we can only have one English player, one Brazilian player, one Belgian player. I found this quite hard.
Yes.
I've got various combinations of 10 players, but I'm struggling for a good number 11, not position, but name on the team sheet. How did you approach this? Because I sort of went for the key players first. You've got to choose Kompany or De Bruyne for Belgium.
Yeah. So I... which one did I do? I probably picked... I found England the hardest.
Yes.
I found an English player the hardest. And I think, you know, if you're looking at goalkeepers post-takeover, then it's only really Joe Hart or Ederson.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
but that limits.
Hart is amazing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't make Hart my English pick.
Okay.
So I picked Ederson.
Yeah.
And then that kind of had a knock-on effect of not being able to pick, say, Fernandinho or Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah.
But it meant
and then that you can't, if you don't pick Fernandinho, you can't, you've got to pick Rodri, but you can't pick David Silva.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. But I couldn't have Hart as my English.
So you went Ederson.
So I went Ederson, okay. Yeah.
I've got Joe Hart and then I've crossed it out and I put Ederson because I've tried to work it out. I've put Walker as my English pick because right back is a bit of an issue. You've got Zabaleta, but then you can't pick Aguero, and I think Aguero's got to be in there.
Yeah. See, I've gone for Zabaleta.
Okay.
Which might be a bit of a cop-out of not being able to... So another starting point is I thought we have to be 4-3-3.
Yes.
Best formation of the era.
Right.
Is kind of the Pep 4-3-3. So I went for that, and... as a result, you can only have one person up front. So if you're picking Aguero, you can't have Haaland. Mm-hmm. But also, Zabaleta was, like, amazing.
Yeah.
And was really, really good for so many years and mm-hmm. crossed eras. You know, he was crucial to the Mancini team, but then Pellegrini as well. And then was really, really important to Guardiola, kind of not just his playing, but his kind of... knowledge and experience.
Fans still sing Zabaleta's name.
Yeah.
Walker's been brilliant and will probably go down as a better right back, but are they going to sing Walker's name?
Yeah. But Walker is probably, you know, that 2017 year when City made all those signings and Walker just like in an instant changed what we thought about fullbacks.
Yeah.
And has been amazing for 7 years. So why did you pick Walker? Just because...
I picked Walker because I put Aguero in, so there's no other real right-back option.
Yes.
I think as good as Stones has been, Foden, you other English players, I think there were other players in those positions.
Yeah.
I can leave Foden out.
Yeah.
I've got other defenders for the centre-back. So, I went Walker. I went company in defence.
Okay.
Ahead of De Bruyne as the Belgian pick. I just think he was probably more important in his position and leading City through that period. I think De Bruyne is the better player and probably the best City I've ever had, but
yeah,
I think as a captain, I think company is.
Captain company. Yeah. So I've left him out. I've gone De Bruyne.
Right.
And yeah, another thing I sort of thought about picking was just like who I've enjoyed watching the most.
Yeah.
And for me, De Bruyne, like, I've not enjoyed watching anyone more than I have
absolutely
De Bruyne.
Yeah.
Like, no footballer makes you...
That was the hardest one to leave out.
Yeah, yeah. No one makes your jaw drop more than watching what De Bruyne
when he
has
picks
done
the ball up on in the centre circle and runs, you're like, something's going
to
happen here.
Yeah, yeah. And also Stones, like, yeah, it was hard to leave Walker and Hart and Foden out and others, but... like seeing Stones do that in the Champions League yeah. final, and also kind of his journey, because he kind of came in 2016 and was like a Pep poster boy, and then Pep had that whole like he's got more balls than everyone in this room, and then really, really struggled and was kind of expecting to be sold, dug in to stay. Probably only stayed because Eric Garcia left. Mm-hmm. Like madness, but. Got his place back, was amazing alongside Diaz, and then has transformed into this incredible footballer. So Stones for me, and then Diaz.
I've gone Diaz as well.
Yeah, just because...
I feel like I could use Bernardo further up the pitch, but I think, yeah.
Yeah.
His impact when he came in.
Yeah, because no one thought they could replace Kompany, and they yeah. just had a year where they hadn't replaced Kompany, yeah. and they'd really struggled and lost the league. And then Diaz came in the week after they lost 5-2 at home to Leicester. And it was like, oh my God, what yeah. is this team doing? And then it was just like that. They just...
I remember it was his first game at Leeds and they drew 1-1 yeah. and he did an interview. He was like, that's not good enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you've just signed.
Yeah.
But he was straight away. He was like, no, we need to do better than that.
Yeah. And it was also kind of, you know, City liked to do a lot of signings really early on and sort of mm-hmm. pursue them for months. And it wasn't really clear who they were going to get at centre back. It was just like, you really need to get one. It was the summer of Koulibaly
yeah,
and Jimenez. And
Is Koundé on the list as well?
Or yeah, I think so, list, yeah. yeah. And then I think it was partly to do with Benfica dropped out of the Champions League in qualifying yeah. when they sort of were expected to go through, and it was suddenly like, we might be able to get him for a bit cheaper. And it was about 64 million, something like that.
With Otamendi going the other way.
Yeah, it was a club record at the time, but his impact was sensational. And yeah. then his impact last season for those final 4 months
yeah.
was epic.
When you sort of imagine a player doing something, a trademark
yeah.
action, his is throwing himself in front of a
yeah.
shot that's destined for the back of the net. And
yeah,
is it PSG
yeah.
where he just threw himself in front of everything?
And, yeah, 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 yeah. And even the Champions League final when he it comes off Edison and he like heads it
yeah.
wide, and it could have gone anywhere. It could have yeah. gone straight back past Edison into the net, but it was just like an amazing mm-hmm. Moment. So I've got Edison, Zabaleta, Stones, Diaz, and you've got Edison, Walker,
Diaz, Kompany.
Right. Who's your left back?
I've gone Ake because there's no other Dutch player really.
Yeah.
It was another nationality that I could fit in.
And yeah.
I can't think of many other left backs. We know left backs being a big issue.
Yeah. See, I've gone Clichy.
I thought Clichy as a French person, but also it's not like I'm freeing up a French spot. Or a Dutch spot elsewhere
yeah.
in the team. So.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Clichy just very key to the kind of early success under Mancini and Pellegrini. And I kind of feel like he didn't get as much time as he wanted under Guardiola because he was at sort of the wrong end of his career. Yeah. But I remember some like wonderful goal he scored at Swansea in the League Cup where it was just like an amazing passing move and he ended up sort of on the right side of the box, sort of finishing it. And it feels like, from a punditry point of view, there is no one better for discussing like how Guardiola wants his players to play than Clichy and Thierry Henry. Like, I just find them so easy yes, to yeah, listen yeah. to and clear. And it's...
Which is a massive skill, like,
yeah.
taking those complex ideas
yeah.
and putting them into...
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I kind of picked Clichy.
I thought Clichy as, a, yeah. as an option, but...
But Ake has yeah. been immense.
And he's another one, his journey is sort of he was dotted around the back four and came as fourth choice or whatever it was, and he started in the Champions League final and was sort of immense at left back. This is where it gets difficult now in midfield, isn't it?
Do you know what? Midfield is where I started.
Yeah.
I thought about Edison, but also... So, yeah, Edison was where I started, and then it was my midfield in terms of... You have to pick Rodri if you're not picking Fernandinho.
Yeah.
And then Kevin De Bruyne is a must. And for me, Yaya Toure has to be in there.
So I've also gone Rodri. I've also gone Yaya Toure. I can't have De Bruyne because I've picked Company. I've gone Gundogan as my other one again because Sané's probably the only other German player. And we're sort of limited by country. So it's not the midfield I want because I think if you're picking the best, you want De Bruyne there, you want David Silva.
Yeah.
But I think Rodri, Yaya and Gundogan is probably the best balance.
Yeah. I mean, Rodri's doing a lot of running for De Bruyne and Toure. But think how many goals De Bruyne and Toure are scoring. And Toure, again, was so incredible in terms of, just the so many seasons, the number of goals and great goals and assists he scored. Obviously, the 2013-14 season was probably his high point, but just a phenomenal footballer. And then, he had his issues with Guardiola, but still kind of made himself relevant in that in that era. And his was part of the first wave of players that came and were written off as rubbish signings. I feel like Paul Merson's critique of Toure does the rounds a lot. But what a signing he turned out to be.
And those sort of those Wembley goals as well, they were so important, weren't they?
Yeah, they were iconic. Although Gundogan's Wembley goals were also pretty good.
Sort of, but the different end of the spectrum, isn't it? So Toure got City from want to be winning these titles to getting them to where they believed that they could.
Yeah.
And Gundogan did sort of came on the journey halfway through start of Guardiola's reign and then got them over the line to become exactly where they wanted to be.
Yeah, and he was brilliant in the running last season, but also as captain. He'll go down as the guy that lifted the Champions League trophy for the first time, and it was his kind of, quiet leadership but being eager to say things when is needed to. Back to that Southampton League Cup game last season that Pep went mad at the players. Gundogan came out and did media afterwards and said, we've not been on it. We've not been good enough. Something's missing. He was the one that was happy to put into the wider world that everyone needed to up their standards.
Yeah.
And he has been a big miss this season.
Absolutely. I'm not going to lie. I'm looking at this team and I think your team is beating mine. Just for the balance of it. Up front, you've not gone Aguero.
I've not gone Aguero. In a similar way to just players that I love to see, I've picked Sané on the left wing.
Okay.
Which...
If you've not gone Gundogan, that's quite a...
Yeah. I mean,
I think that's a popular choice.
He was just great fun to watch, and he was part of probably the most enjoyable City team on the eye. Mostly due to circumstance, because it was 17-18 when City had a disappointing first season under Pep, and then 17-18 they just blew the league away. Mm-hmm. And they could never have blown the league away again because everyone was increasingly ready for them. But some of those games that he played and scored the winner against Liverpool in that game the following season, just like really good.
Unstoppable, that pick.
In a similar way to Doku started off, but just kind of with more consistency. And it was kind of like, the perfect City signing and picking this kind of young talent that they could bring more out of. Mm-hmm. And if he's not going to stay, then you get a bigger fee than you've paid for him. Yeah. So he's sort of almost the textbook City signing. but didn't actually stay that long.
I'm going to assume Haaland is your...
Haaland is, yeah.
I think because of obviously his goals, but always also he's the only Norwegian. It's quite a good pick.
Yeah, good pick. Unless you're not have Oscar Bob, but
I'm not got Oscar Bob.
Not quite, no. And then my final spot is the hardest.
Yeah, this is the pick. One where you've used up all sort of the.
I can't have Foden. I can't have Sterling. I can't have David Silva, Bernardo Silva, Gabriel Jesus. So I've kind of shoehorned a player in there in Mario Balotelli and just kind of imagined that he stayed at City and Pep turned him into an amazing winger, wide forward, who could...
I think we're allowed a bit of leeway on this.
Yeah, who could dazzle. But it was really, really... That was... my 11th position where I was like, Christ, who do I...
I thought about Mahrez and very good. But I don't know. I've not gone for a sort of two wingers and a striker.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted Aguero and Haaland in there because I've just gone for the best attackers.
The best attackers, yeah.
And then the third one, I wasn't sure. I've written down Dzeko because he was he was very, very, very good player.
Yeah. And underrated, really.
Underrated. If Aguero wasn't there, he'd have scored so many more goals. But even his record itself was good. But yeah, I think Mahrez could be there. I don't know.
Now you've said Mahrez, it's like, oh yeah, maybe. It'd be a better fit, I think, for that right wing.
Yeah.
And, you know, was really, really important.
Imaginary Balotelli. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think if you go on balance, you probably want Mahrez on that side, possibly.
Yes.
On the run to the first, finally.
Yeah. I think I want Mahrez, but you don't care because you've just got three strikers.
I've not gone for any sort of tactics.
My three goal scorers are scoring 100 goals, which is fair enough.
And three players who definitely want to play in the middle and not.
Yeah.
I've gone for the England national team tactic and just put 11 players on the pitch and they'll work it out.
Yeah. But. It was...
another one I've written down, potentially a left-back, is Kolarov, who was an option. But I think left-back was quite an open one because there's not been many players who've impressed as much as other positions, but also the ones who have are pretty much the only player of their nationality.
Yeah. And when I was trying to sort of squeeze the defence in, I did kind of think about Akanji, who, again, hasn't been there long, but is Swiss, which nobody else is.
Yeah.
And... has done amazingly since he came in.
But it's mad, like you say, we've not got David Silva in either of our teams.
No. See, if I'd not had Clichy, I might have considered Nasri as well.
Yeah.
Because Nasri was someone who had so much talent and was so good to watch, but then was so frustrating. And, you know, I think he saw himself as an ideal player for Pep. I think he might have said it before Pep came in. He was like, Pep'll enjoy working with me. But it was just like, he didn't quite have the work ethic to get there. But no.
I think he's a bit like Balotelli in the sort of what could have been.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, David Silva is probably the biggest miss. And then, you know, either Kompany or De Bruyne.
But again, it comes back to the keeper, the holder midfielder, the Brazil, Spain sort of.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've left all three players out who have a statue outside the Etihad. So maybe that isn't the best team, but it just shows how difficult it is to do.
I would argue as well, if you were picking just the best players, you probably wouldn't pick Torre or Gundogan, maybe. Or there would be a much more bigger debate, but because of their
nationality,
it's easier to put them in.
Yeah.
I don't know what other combinations of this we can do, but it is quite interesting.
Well, I mean, I think there will be something on the website and it'd be quite fun if anyone else wants to have a go and... Pick a better team.
Yeah, I think
who's winning our game?
I think yours is because there is an actual seems to be
there a is a structure.
Like, I've just gone for players who played well in the position without considering a wider formula.
Yeah, I think just about, but it'd be close.
Yeah, I feel like yours is a Pep team with a system. Mine's maybe a Mancini or Pellegrini team where it's sort of on the way to.
Yeah,
to becoming the sort of the finished product, but let us know if there's a piece coming. I'm sure there'll be comments social media as ever. We'll be back after a short break, and we've got some questions from listeners that have been submitted, and we will be answering them in the final part of today's podcast. Hello, welcome back to the Talking City podcast. We've discussed the international break, ticket prices, and our two interesting teams of one player per the nationality. Now we put a call out for some questions, and we've got a few. I was expecting a lot of football questions, but quite a few of them.
Industry questions.
Industry and our jobs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Derek is
not one from Jim Mullen, is there?
Who? Never heard of him. First is from Derek, and so I was right in at the deep end, but it's good. It's a question that we get quite a lot.
Yes.
Is what are the MEN doing to close the gap on more United coverage over City? City are the treble winners and World Club champions. It feels like they're second-class citizens to United in the paper and online. I think it comes down to numbers, doesn't it? We are always banging the drum for City.
Yeah. Yeah.
The basic truth of it is more people read United.
Yeah.
Especially online.
I think you should split online and paper, though, because I think there's even coverage of the clubs in paper. Yeah, it has been. Yeah. And, you know, the print team are certainly very proud of the fact that there is that. You know, there will always be, there's three pages on United, there'll be three pages on City or four.
And the standalone products when City win a big trophy.
Yeah. I can't.
Really good.
Yeah. So many standalone products that we've done. And it has been. I think online, I think there are more stories around United. I think there, you know, there are more news stories around United. They are a bigger club.
Yeah.
There's more noise around United because they've had success in the past.
Yeah.
So you have a lot more voices. So if you have a lot more United voices talking about United, I don't really think you have that with City.
Yeah. In terms of ex-players and...
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm not sure the City fan base sort of cares for any old sort of commentary on City. You know, do they want to know what Simon Jordan thinks about City? Do they want to know what Gabby Agbonlahor thinks about City? I'm not sure they do. So I feel like fewer things are written about City than United purely because of that.
I always say, because we're in a sort of a sports desk where we write about City, our colleagues write about United.
Yeah.
I always say you've got to work harder for a City story in terms of who's going to read it, who's going to engage in it, because, like you say, there's less stuff around. I think City fans are, they let you know if they don't like something.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, and I think there's also more of a sort of, they don't want things just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
And... So, you know, part of writing is learning not to write almost and not to just do things for the sake of it. And, you know, I'm sure we can always do more or do better things. But I do kind of, I don't think they're treated the same, City and United, in the sense that the City audience is treated differently to the United audience because they are different people. Yeah. You know, we're not saying, oh, well, this is how all United fans think, so we're giving you all the same stuff on City. I think there's a bit more, you know, it's just catering for a City audience rather than catering for a...
And our United audiences, we've got a lot of UK fans, but a lot of international fans as well, so it's writing for them as well.
Yeah, and, you know, and people interested in different things, but... you know, there's always a big bump in the paper whenever City do well.
Yeah.
Because a lot of City fans go out and buy the paper when they win the cup final or when they win the Champions League or anything like that. And I mean, we're always open to suggestion of things we can. Was it Close the Gap or something like that?
Yes, Close the Gap, yeah.
Close the Gap. Mind the Gap.
Knock United off the perch.
Things that we can do. But, I think there is always kind of an even spread in the paper. And then online, it's just there's just more noise around United and more United fans want that. I won't name the website, but there's a website I've seen sort of all weekend. It's just been doing stuff around like 115 charges and expulsion and, you know, taking like really niche stuff, like the opinion of one random who no one cares about, and using it to make like 8 articles that say City could get expelled. What could happen if City get expelled? What could the punishment? And it's like, yeah.
Well, on that, we're trying to make sure that.
Yeah, we
don't need.
No, we don't want to sensationalise, and we don't want to write things for the sake of it, and or things, you know. I think there's a panel piece gone out this morning actually around FFP with an Everton and a Forest writer, and the point I've made is that we are sick to death about writing about City, and their charges when there is nothing new. No. It's just that other fans go, what about City, and dragging City every time there's sort of a cough and spit with their case. And it's just like, you know, we just kind of, we appreciate that the City fan base don't need to have it all shoved down the throat because they're better read and better sort of informed about the situation, hopefully because they've read some of our stuff, than, you know, MPs in Nottingham who are writing letters to Parliament or the Premier League going, well, what about City?
It's an interesting one, is it? Because you've got to balance, like, if there is an update, I think it's legitimate to say what is available as City, but the answer is always the same, isn't it?
And yeah.
I would encourage everyone to read the piece that you've written of just the sort of question and answer. This is the truth, and this is what we know, and the answer is we know very little.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this earlier, and the charges are always in my head. But I remember speaking to, say, Kieran Maguire and a few other people at the time, and, like, on the day, because the day when it broke was massive.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one knew anything. It was all like, oh. And I remember speaking to those people, and I remember, like, Kieran Maguire saying, like, the Premier League got this completely wrong. They've laid so many charges down.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to take ages. It's going to be a massive pain for everyone. It's going to be strung out, and, like, they are really serious charges to prove. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have, like, it's going to be really hard to prove them. And, you know, I was just thinking before, like, I hope, you know, all those people that had those thoughts at the time, because I didn't necessarily have them because I didn't know enough about them, but, you know, Kieran and others are more educated and able to pick up stuff quicker. Like, I hope they're really happy with their takes from that opening sort of day and for those first hours, because they were spot on. And it hasn't really moved on since then. It remains the case, or has remained the case, since the 6th of February 2023.
And if it's taken, what, 3-4 months to hear Everton, Forest, will be Leicester, it's going to take a lot more to hear 115 charges.
Yeah. But the 115 charges is an area where, you know, I think it's very easy, if you don't write a lot about City, sort of come in and mention it. But, you know, if we're following the team for every match, like, it is not, you don't need to mention 115 charges because Phil Foden's put the ball in the net past Brentford. And fans aren't talking about it.
No.
It's not really like everyone's consumed by these charges. They're just like ethereal.
It's like the UEFA ones. Like, we didn't really know anything or think about it. Even the hearing was obviously behind closed doors.
Yeah.
The only time we could offer an update was when was announced.
Yeah. But I would like to think that the coverage of the Premier League charge has been better than the UEFA one was because of the context of the UEFA. And because, you know, we have that CAS verdict to go off and things like that. Yeah. So, you know, the 115 charges is an example where I would like to think that, we're maybe not writing as much as other places about it, but what we're doing is pretty comprehensive and sort of the right amount that people want
sticking
to read
to the
about.
Facts, not the hysteria.
Yeah.
There we are. It's quite a long-winded answer to your question, Derek. Mohammed from Oldham says, hi, Joe and Simon. I'm a big fan of the podcast. First of all, how did you get into your career in journalism? And then how do you find travelling with City and being away from home? And another question, how do the players react when they see you on tour or at games? Now, the players often act with a bit of disdain, don't they, when we're in a mix zone and we have to sort of ask and beg for 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Some of them are polite. Some of them are quite funny with it. Others just, yeah. Especially if they've not played well, just blank you. And
yeah, some are better than others. Yeah.
You've got some, like, I always find Walker and Stones are ones who, if they don't want to speak, they'll at least make you laugh about it. So you're like, oh, go on then. And then you realise they've just fobbed you off.
Yeah, Bernardo. And Bernardo.
I
feel like it is very different now than it maybe was even 5 years ago, because the international commitments that these guys have to do.
International
broadcasters, like the broadcasting commitments that they have to do are so much, like, you don't see it, but after a game, you know, you might watch the game on telly and Haaland does BT, and then that's that.
Yeah.
BT, TNT now. But Haaland will do TNT, and then he might go off and do 20 other international broadcasters. So by the time he's walking past us and just wants to go home.
Well, that's another excuse. I've done
Exactly. I don't blame anyone who has already done 20 interviews and doesn't want to stop to talk to me. Yeah. I don't blame anyone who's done none and doesn't want to stop and talk to me. But it's, I think you do get a bit of credit for sort of being regular and seeing their faces more often than other people. And I know, you know, we've certainly had, there have been times when players have wanted to say something and they've chosen to say it in front of people that they know a bit more.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, it's still pretty distant. But
there are some who are not rude, but blatantly don't want to. Talk.
Yeah. And again, that is up to them.
Yeah.
It just means that they never get above a 3 in the player ratings.
I won't name the player, but there was one who, at a Champions League away game, walked past us because he had to, and then shuffled behind the advertising boards to avoid us. So he fulfilled his commitment of walking past us and saying that he did go into the mix zone, but then did not want to speak. And I mean, it's one of them. You just played a big game. You want to talk to your mates. You want to go home.
Yeah. And also, you know, you don't really need to say anything.
No.
And it's almost like an inconvenience if they say anything and then somebody gets flagged up to them being like, why is this in the papers? Yeah, or why is this on the back pages? And things like that. And I've had, you know, instances where not necessarily players, but staff who you speak to, then you write up what they've said and then, oh, I didn't realise it was going to be done like that. And, you know, because they can't control it.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's broadcast as well, what they say on camera will stay on camera as long as it's not clipped or anything like that. But, you know, I don't really blame kind of Erling Haaland for not being abreast of the regulations of the UK newspaper industry at football matches and things like that. So,
and you get some players who... So I remember Calvin Phillips stopped after Rodri had got sent off, and he had some a run of three games, and he had something to say. But if he's not played, he's not.
It's turned into a bit of a mix zone chat. This, but it's quite, you know, we don't want to be hearing from the same voices all the time.
No.
So there was a time earlier in the season where I think Nathan Ake did a mix zone on a Monday, and then a mix zone on a Saturday, and then was put up for a Champions League press conference on the Monday. So he'd spoken three times in a week, and then did the mix zone in the Tuesday after the game as well. And, you know, nobody wants to be hearing from Nathan Ake four times in 8 days. He's a lovely man and often has very interesting things to say.
He's one of the better players for stopping.
Yeah, but you don't want to...
You don't hear from any player.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not... Not fair, but you don't want to be asking him every single time. Yeah. And the same with Manu Akanji, did quite a few recently. You know, you want to be getting different voices.
There was a period where Rico Lewis didn't realise he could say no.
After
he'd made his debut, he kept stopping a lot of times, and brilliant, again, lovely lad. But
But you don't want Rico, like, three times in a week, especially when he's just come into the team. And the same, like, you know, you don't want Stefan Ortega if he hasn't played.
No.
You might want him if he has played, if he's made a save or things like that. But it really depends on the circumstances. Just like the broadcasters want to speak to the goal scorer or the match winner, you know, so do we. But we also want to speak to people who have or are in a particularly interesting moment or something like that. So, you know, it's there's not really a science to it as such.
You've just got to ask every player and get ignored. And
yeah.
Part of the question says, how do the players react when they see you on tour or at games? I find away games, they're a bit more open to step in, partly because all of them have to walk past and also because they appreciate you've come a long way. And on tour as well, you get a lot more access and they acknowledge that you've gone to America or Japan or whatever.
And home games, they're not... and it's similar to, like, you know, broadcasters, they know that what they're going to say is not going to be twisted. Yeah. Like, if they see a familiar face in an unfamiliar environment, they're more likely to come. But also, away games or tour, they're only going to the team bus.
Yeah.
Whereas at home, they've all got family and friends up in the boxes who they want to see and get home to. Whereas it doesn't matter as much to them if they're speaking to us for 5 minutes rather than waiting an extra 5 minutes on the team bus. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I might be wrong, but I think the only time Jack Grealish has stopped in a mix zone was in Houston last summer or summer before.
He's only stopped on tour, so he stopped in Houston and he stopped
last summer, did he?
Japan or Hong Kong.
So that I don't think he's ever come through at City because he probably goes up to his box, but
Yeah.
That is an example of a player who rarely stops. I don't think Haaland has, again, stopped apart from his debut in Green Bay.
No, well, Haaland was going to speak, it's a funny story, Haaland was going to speak in Istanbul after winning the Champions League, and he was waiting, and there was sort of like, it was like a podium that they came out to in front of a desk, and we were all sort of waiting to ask questions, and he was waiting very patiently at the side for Rodri to finish talking, and a few of us were like, Haaland's here, like, you know.
Yeah. Come on. He scored the winner, but yeah.
Yeah, and others kept asking Rodri so many questions that Haaland eventually just gave up and walked off, and it was like, oh, no. One of those chances where, like, normally we'd be delighted to speak to Rodri, the guy who scored the winner in the final, but we were like, come on, give us Erling. But again, Haaland probably does 3-4 times as many interviews as any other player, sort of with other commitments all season.
I've never seen a scrum like it in Green Bay. And he just played his first game, scored, and it was, I think the UK media only got one question from one journalist, and it was just international media all over him. And
it was like,
this guy's a superstar. And I saw all the other players very happily walking by in the background, and there were so many little things, like they were all catching up with Leroy Sané, and there's so many things going on behind me. I wasn't even looking at Haaland. I was seeing all these players delighted that they didn't have to speak to us.
Yeah.
We've gone on quite a bit of a ramble here, so we're not going to get through all of them. I'm sure we can save some of these questions for later. Quick one to end. Amir's from Sydney, working away in Australia. Thanks for listening. He says, what do you think City will realistically win this season? I hear talk of a double treble, but I want your unblinkered view on it. Can we do it?
Oh,
I think can they do it?
Yeah.
But will they do it?
Yeah.
I said this last hour, I think they'll win 2 of 3, and I think that, I don't know. I think they'll win the FA Cup.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I can, I think the Premier League is very, very hard to win. I'll have a better idea of that after the Arsenal game, I think.
I think Arsenal is the big one. I think if they win that, their chances of winning the league go up by about 20-30%.
Yeah. If they draw, even then, it's reliant on other teams. We've seen the schedule.
If they draw, will they be 3 points behind Liverpool with worse goal difference?
Possibly.
I think.
The schedule means the FA Cup means they're going to have a game in hand until probably the last week of the season. I think they're going to be chasing until that sort of last week where they'll almost certainly have to go to Tottenham in the penultimate game
and win
there for the first time in the league.
Yeah. I think we could see FA Cup and Champions League, but not Premier League. Yeah. I mean, we could. They're banging it for all three. We're still...
I think the hardest obstacle in the Champions League is Real Madrid in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll fear Arsenal or Bayern. No. It'll be very difficult if they get there, but...
Yeah. And like Rodri said, having the second leg at home is going to be so important for both quarter and semi. The Premier League, it is just the schedule and the fact that Arsenal and Liverpool are so good, and City haven't beaten either Arsenal or Liverpool, but also sort of any of the top five. You know, if City beat Arsenal and Villa in the space of 4 days at home, then they're bang up for it. But, you know, Brighton away after the FA Cup final, you feel a bit uneasy about. Tottenham away probably in the last week of the season, you feel uneasy about.
Forest away, they've got a point to prove now. They're fighting relegation. They didn't win last season.
Yeah.
A lot of just difficult ones, aren't they?
Yeah. And, you know, Liverpool, the quadruple dream is over, and the Europa League, people are saying, oh, you know, it completes the set for Klopp, but like, does anyone care about the Europa League? Like, does a big club care about the Europa League? I'm not sure City will want to win the Europa League before Guardiola leaves, because they'll want to be in the Champions League every year. So Liverpool, I think the big one for Liverpool is the Premier League, because then they can say, oh well, Klopp's won two rather than just one. So, and obviously Arsenal are absolutely desperate to win their first after falling at the end last year. So it feels like the odds are most against City in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I also think obviously they could win every game and not win the title, but it's out of the hands a bit, and you've got Brighton who've got to play the three title contenders, I think.
Yeah,
and Tottenham do.
Yeah.
De Villa as well.
Villa play at least two of them, yeah.
So there you are, there are other teams who could play a big
part. Yeah, which is what Pep always says, you know, you've got to respect the other teams in the competition and things like that. But, you know, from a purely numbers point of view, City have to get the better of other teams over 10 games rather than, you know, it'll be five in the Champions League to win it and two to win the FA Cup. So
I think we're confident they'll win at least one.
Yeah, I think so.
Just don't know which one.
Yeah, and that probably moves on to another topic which we could go on and on about, is what is a successful season for City. But
let's save that.
We'll save that for later,
We've run out of time, and unfortunately we've run out of time for a question from Michael, who says, Simon, where do you get your wealth of knowledge from? We can't go into that, I'm afraid. You're a joy to listen to, says Michael.
I wonder if that's sarcastic. We'll see.
Is that your alter ego?
Yeah.
Submitted a question. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back before the Arsenal game to preview what is a massive game in the title race. You know the deal. Like and subscribe. Follow us and wherever you listen to your podcasts, and on YouTube. And we're on social media as ever. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back before the Arsenal game.